Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Good morning. Hello, welcome. Come on in. Grab a seat, or stand, or walk, whatever you're doing. Thanks for joining me here on Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Jesse. This show is broadcast on the unceded ancestral territory of the Hunkaminam and Squamish-speaking peoples. And I'm very grateful to be able to do that and do this radio thing, which is oral storytelling, a tradition that is longstanding in the ancestral inhabitants of this place. So just thinking about that today. On the show, at least three pieces. We're going to hear an interview I did with John Stark and Brad Davies from New Westminster about the New Westminster Crises Response Pilot Project. Don't worry, I'll explain that and set it up a little bit for you. We also have two segments from Danny, one that you might have heard on Tuesday, and another brand fresh new one talking about the expansion of bus lanes along Hastings Street and his piece about the South Memorial Park planned renovations to turn it into a FIFA practice pitch for the World Cup. So we'll have that and me talking and some music. And I guess we'll just start with that, like we usually do. We're going to hear from Miguel Maravilla, who recently put out a record called The Makers of History, which is dedicated to the ongoing struggle for the liberation of the Philippines and for all of us displaced from our homeland, beaten down and silenced, disappeared, our lands and livelihood stolen from us. The album came out November 7th. It's called The Makers of History. You can grab it on Bandcamp. And all proceeds from this album will be supporting the 3rd Anakbayan Canada Congress on November 29th to December 1st. So we are going to hear the opening track on The Makers of History. It is called The Pearl of the Orient. We'll be right back.
future in your eyes.
Pearl of the Orient by Miguel Maravilla from The Makers of History, which is out now, and proceeds of which will be supporting the 3rd Anak Bayan Canada Congress on November 29th to 21st. You can head to Bandcamp to pick that up. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM. As I mentioned off the top, I'm Jesse. This weekend, my in-laws were in town, and they are longtime CFL fans. Ooh, still getting that noise. Longtime CFL fans who were in town for the Grey Cup, because that's what happened here over the weekend. And we, you know, I'm not personally a CFL fan or even really a football fan, but it was cool to take part in all of the festivities. They had a big festival down at Canada Place, the convention center. And they had set up sort of like a room for each team. And, you know, most of them were, I guess, kind of what you would expect. A big hall with some tables and music playing and lots of libations flowing. You know, the cheerleaders coming into some of the rooms to do routines. We saw the Winnipeg Blue Bombers cheerleaders do a Mean Girls-themed routine that was very great. Featured lots of flips and a cool remix, cool audio track. And they also had some more out there things. I was not familiar with the Atlantic Schooners, who are the 10th CFL team. Still undefeated is their slogan, because they haven't lost, because, well, they're not playing games. The franchise does not yet exist, but there is this ongoing hope that they can get the 10th CFL team in Atlantic Canada. And at their pavilion, there was, you know, some Newfoundland folksy music playing, and the ability to become an honorary Newfoundlander by doing a screech ceremony. And if you are not aware of what a screech ceremony is, don't worry, I'm about to tell you. You get a shot of screech, which is sort of like moonshine rum, and they pull out a cod that in this case has been in a cooler, cold storage, shipped across the country specifically for this event, and you read a little declaration that you want to be a Newfoundlander, and you kiss the fish right on the lips. And then you take the shot of screech, and everybody cheers. Oh, and you dress up in a classic rain getup with the, you know, the big yellow raincoat and the floppy yellow hat. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Very silly. And now I have a cool certificate that says I'm an honorary Newfoundlander in case I ever need to go get out to the other side of the country. So that was fun. The game itself was fun. The Toronto Argonauts beat the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in the end. The halftime show was the Jonas Brothers, which my partner Katie was very excited about. I definitely recognized some songs. Good pop music. Great choreography and just showmanship overall. They incorporated many of the cheerleaders from all the teams. To do a big synchronized dance number. That was great. So I had fun. Next time the Grey Cup is in Vancouver, which will probably be in 9 or 10 years, you should go. It's fun. Even if you don't go to the game, you can just go to the other parts of it. Yeah. Anyway, we're going to now play some more music. Why not? This is Attawolf. And it's from the album Nostalgia. It is called Tipsy Love here on CJSF 90.1 FM.
Baby, throw it back like Canelo. Beat it like Canelo. Show up, girl, Camaro. How come not just for the weekend? There you go, with me but on the low. All week giving me the red light. No, they even see your brake light. Text on my phone, yes, you again. Haven't seen you in a few weeks. First I try to abstain. She's on the Uber over sending new pics. Oh yeah, and she had a few drinks. Straight from her door, she did undress. Tack her to my wall like Pinterest. Shorty good on the cover like Van Jess. Only come over when you're not sober. Head on my shoulder. Baby girl, look at her. When I blink, you're gone. Is it something that I don't? Cause girl, I want you around. But I'm just your tipsy love. Guess I'm just your tipsy love. Where she threw it back like Canelo. Felt it, D'Angelo. Baby girl, let me know if we could chill on a weekday. There you go. Want more girl on the low. No on commitment. But now it's different. Woke up to the morning sun. Turn to the right, she already gone. Now I feel down, kinda like done. This girl savage like Stallion. Keep on making the same mistakes. I let you in, my heart still aches. Now you're incommunicado. Thought you'd be my Eminado. I don't know. Only come over when you're not sober. Head on my shoulder. Baby girl, look at her. When I blink, you're gone. Is it something that I don't? Cause girl, I want you around. But I'm just your tipsy. Only come over when you're not sober. Head on my shoulder. Baby girl, look at her. When I blink, you're gone. Something that I don't know. I want you around. Cause you're just my tipsy love. You're just my tipsy love. And I see it to you.
I'm still lost in Karashika's smoky eyeshadow, Omotola's red lipstick. I'm wondering if Regina will stop her suicide mission and not treat me like Domitila. Bonale, 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 you were there, right? It was the 90th minute, Atlanta 96. My heart was racing. The whistle triggered an explosion of dancing in the street. Now, I know what gold tastes like. Honey.
Tipsy Love by Ada Wolf here on Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Jesse. And now we are going to hear a piece by Danny, local community radio journalist here at the station, about, well, something that if you are a SFU student or, you know, just Burnaby resident who takes transit or who drives along Hastings Street, will be quite interesting to you. So here we go.
Tensions were high at the Burnaby City Council meeting on November 18, 2024, when TransLink's Director of System Planning, Matt Craig, and Manager of Bus Speed and Reliability, Peter Vorel, gave a presentation that proposed improvements for the speed and reliability of the R5, a rapid bus that travels from the downtown Vancouver core to Simon Fraser University on Burnaby Mountain. TransLink's proposed plan was to dedicate the curbside lanes of Hastings Street between Willingdon Avenue and Duthie Avenue to buses from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. between Monday and Sunday. While this would help alleviate the delays that Burnaby Transit users often experience along Hastings Street, many Burnaby City councillors took issue with the street parking that this expansion would remove. The reason given being that the local businesses along Hastings Street in the Burnaby Heights neighborhood rely on those parking spaces to accommodate their customers. Some on council believe the TransLink had not done enough outreach towards the local businesses in the Burnaby Heights area to determine what the economic impact of this transit expansion would be. Finally, after an extensive round of questions from Burnaby City Council, Burnaby Councillor Daniel Tatro was able to pass an amendment for TransLink's proposal, shortening the length of the expansion by 4 streets from Willingdon Avenue to Delta Avenue.
So I've heard lots of discussion tonight, and we have heard more correspondence on both sides than we've probably heard on any issue. I think lost in the discussion, or what we see sometimes in this divisive debate, is we miss the common goals that exist in all the interested parties. So, you know, I know talking to many transit riders, whether they're all-purpose riders or occasional riders, that they want reliable, frequent, and faster service and experience to get to where they need to go. But I also know that these transit riders, they do care about these small businesses, and they want to access these small businesses, and they do value and cherish the unique nature of the Heights. I also know that at the same time, many Burnaby residents and merchants in the area care passionately about climate change and improving transit as well, but also want to ensure that, you know, that the businesses continue to succeed and thrive, but also that the sense of strong community of the Heights feels alive, because it is a distinct feel of the Heights.
Another part of the amendment stated that the city explore the feasibility of bus bulbs along the corridor between Willingdon Avenue and Delta Avenue, which would give buses the ability to pick passengers up without having to change lanes while retaining the area's street parking. The purpose of this amendment was to maintain the street parking available in the Burnaby Heights area so as to not cause any economic impacts for local businesses. After the council meeting, CJSF was able to speak with Dennis Agar, the executive director of Movement Metro Vancouver Transit Riders, a public transit advocacy group who had attended the meeting alongside numerous members of Movement that were in support of TransLink's original proposed expansion.
It was watered down a little bit. You could consider it a compromise. But what we heard from council is that, you know, their only concern was that it impacted businesses, right? That it took away parking. But they told us that they want to do some pretty bold stuff with bus lanes as long as it doesn't impact businesses. So that, I think, really opens the door for us to get more engaged and push for things like bus lanes on Willingdon, bus lanes on Imperial, on streets that where businesses might not be affected. They really opened the door for that, and I would say especially to you know, your listeners and to SFU students to really get engaged to try and push that conversation forward.
While we were unable to receive a statement from the Burnaby Heights Merchant Association that was against this original proposal, they'd released a statement on social media about the council's decision in the days following. It reads, "The biggest win is seeing democracy in action in Burnaby. In a democracy, we all have our say, but we don't always have our way. We were proud that Burnaby showed that we still have a civil society where we can express ourselves and find a place of common ground and compromise. We are proud of and deeply grateful to our city council for upholding that process." In the end, Burnaby City Council's decision to amend the original proposal from TransLink ended up being a relatively popular decision, with groups both for and against the proposal being relatively satisfied with the end results. Once again, this has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. And this piece would not be possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
Thanks to Danny for that piece. Good to get an update on what's going on at city council meetings and what's going on with the bus lane along Hastings Street. Okay, well, we'll just jump right into the next segment, which, as I mentioned off the top, requires a little bit of preface, I suppose. I spoke with John Stark and Brad Davies from the city of New Westminster about the Crises Response Pilot Project. And like many municipalities in Metro Vancouver, the city of New Westminster is trying to find compassionate, innovative, and goal-driven ways to address three crises: homelessness, mental health, and substance use. And the idea with this pilot project is to treat all three of those crises as related and intersecting, and to advance proactive, resilient, and strategic organizational approaches that can be used long-term. So it is a different approach that is informed by a lot of research and a lot of consultation with various stakeholders. And so I spoke for about half an hour with John and Brad, and we give a pretty good in-depth detail. I also attended a council meeting this week where they gave a project update, and I'll talk a little bit about that afterwards. But for now, let's hear my interview. I will note that at one point, Rhea is mentioned, and she also shows up, Rhea Renouf shows up at the end of the interview to provide a little bit of extra information. She does not introduce herself, but she is the communications person on this project. So when you hear her voice or you hear Rhea mentioned, that's who we're talking about.
John Stark, a manager of social planning. I've been with the city for 18 years. I've been extensively involved with addressing homelessness, even though the work I deal with deals with a broad range of social issues. And over the past year and a half, being involved with the Crisis Response Pilot Project, I'm really just doing a lot of research with regards to placing in a position where it can launch.
My name's Brad Davey. I'm the Deputy Fire Chief with New Westminster Fire and Rescue Services, but I've also been working with the pilot project for the last year and a half. I bring to this project my background of being a pharmacist with Fraser Health Authority and have some 30 years with that.
Great. Thanks again to both of you for being here. Can you give us a high-level overview of what is the Crisis Response Pilot Project?
The Crisis Response Pilot Project addresses the three crises of homelessness, mental health, and substance use. And we know with regards to the pandemic that all municipalities, with regards to these crises, there's been an increase. Between 2020 and 2023, based on our point-in-time homeless count, there was a 65% increase in homelessness in New Westminster. And our neighboring municipalities had similar or higher increases in homelessness. Combined with that, we have the opioid epidemic. And we also know with the pandemic that isolation became an issue. A number of faith-based and nonprofits closed their doors, just like civic facilities. And this really, for people who were dealing with mental health issues, there was definitely individuals who self-medicated to deal with this isolation and loneliness. So we saw these three crises definitely take hold. And as a municipality, we realized that the status quo couldn't continue, that if we really wanted to make progress, we couldn't just look at one crisis because we'd have limited effectiveness. We'd have to look at three because they're interrelated. We also recognized that these are senior government responsibilities, but we needed to do something in the interim as we work with the senior levels of government with regards to funding and resources. So there are three interdepartmental teams as part of the Crisis Response Pilot Project. The first is what we call a crisis response team, which is a non-clinical outreach team. And its purpose is to make connections, develop relations and trust. And that's done through trying to meet the needs of our unhoused population and those living with mental health and substance use issues. And this could be providing food, clothing items, taxi vouchers with regards to accessing services. And the whole idea for them is to make appropriate referrals to ensure that the people are getting the assistance they need. So they work with our faith-based nonprofit and provincial organizations and teams to address those issues. The other team we have is an operations support team. And this is really looking at the externalities related to the three crises. We know that businesses and residents have been impacted by these three crises. And we also recognize that when someone's impacted, they want to have a response to. So through bylaws, through fire, police, integrated services, and engineering operations and parks, they're trying to address the impacts of these three crises on residents and businesses. And we know if we can bring them on side and address their issues, they will be advocating with us with regards to trying to address these crises. And the third is what we're calling our policy and advocacy team. And this team is really important. This team is working with the senior levels of government around additional funding, resources, and services, addressing needs and gaps, and really communicating with that crisis response team and operations support team to get a sense as to what's happening on the ground and where we need to be advocating. And we have based this on extensive consultation and case study research. We looked at 9 municipalities, some of the best practices there. We met with several of the municipalities, and we did extensive consultation with health and ministry officials.
As you've described, there's a lot of moving parts there, and the whole point is that there are these three intersecting crises. How are you managing all of those different layers and their interactions?
You're right. We have a lot of moving parts, and that does make it a little bit complex, but it is a requirement. The reason being is that we need to have subject matter experts from each area in each field to address all the externalities. We're trying to address the concerns of not just those that are unsheltered, but also the businesses and the community in itself. And it is quite a complex part. John alluded to the fact how we had engaged quite a few people before we started the program. But along with that engagement, we've brought in a lot of different services to support us. And we're trying to bring a lot of different teams and support services and different agencies together to make sure that we can be effective. We realize that if we try to do this all ourselves, that we're not likely to be successful. So we do have the three different teams within the city, and those three teams are working well with the nonprofits, the faith-based organizations that are out there, provincial bodies, just about everything that you need so that you can make sure that we provide a holistic and wholesome approach to the three issues that we're trying to address and that it is fulsome.
You've both mentioned working with faith-based organizations, working with other community organizations and levels of government. I want to ask both, this crisis is not unique to New Westminster. It is something that is affecting municipalities across the country, around the continent and the world, but also particularly here in the Lower Mainland, all the other municipalities. So on the one hand, what is unique about the circumstances in New Westminster? And also, how do you work with or learn from or in other ways collaborate with other municipalities surrounding New Westminster?
The most unique part, I think, is our approach. One of the first things that we did is we looked at some of the literature that is out there. And as John has already said, we looked at all the other municipalities. We're not actually copying what anybody else has done. Instead, we're trying to cherry pick the approaches from the other different municipalities that are working. And then we have quite an active program involved to try to make sure that we engage everybody so that we can be iterative in our approach and that we can adjust to identify any gap that's being missed or anything that we need to engage or to include anybody in that could be affected by these crises so that they have a voice to point us in the right direction if we need to improve anything. You know, we have some working groups involved with the program to inform the project, and we've set up some focus groups to try and inform the project to make sure that we don't miss anything and to make sure that we're including everybody that we should be including. I don't know if you want to add to that, John.
Like I stated, I think one of the strengths of this is not to look at the one crisis, because a lot of municipalities are looking at homelessness, but really to look at in conjunction with the three, because we know that mental health and substance use are contributing factors to homelessness, and that these three crises are interrelated. So taking a more holistic approach and looking at them in combination, I think we'll have a lot more success. Just at some of the things we're looking at additional supportive housing in complex care beds, because we know that emergency shelters are not a long-term solution. And in a lot of cases, there's not even adequate emergency shelter capacity. So a big part of this is really compiling information, making a case that these are the needs and gaps. And this is how many supportive housing units we have, and working with the senior levels of government and trying to allay some of their concerns. Sometimes senior levels of government are concerned because there's opposition within communities with regard to supportive housing and other interventions. So by working with our business community and residents and addressing their needs, we're hoping to bring them on side and be part of that advocacy with regards to addressing these crises and looking at longer term solutions